This is James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist, here with episode 151 of Industry Misinterpretations from ESUG 2009 Camp Small Talk. This podcast consists of a number of small snippets we did with a bunch of people working on various projects at Camp Small Talk. This is part one of two. We'll be releasing part two tomorrow because there was just so much content. Hope you enjoy it. We'll get back to part two tomorrow. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning.
So we're here with Lucas. Lucas, say hi.
Hi.
I guess you're working at Seaside, at least, to be believed.
The sign says so, yeah.
So what's going on with Seaside 2.9?
Actually, I'm preparing a presentation, but with Seaside 2.9, we'll give a presentation on the status on Tuesday, which will be a short presentation just with the update, what we've done in the past year, what is remaining missing for going beta and then going to release.
Okay.
Is the tutorial using Seaside 2.9?
Yes, actually, we're using 2.9, the latest version, the latest code.
Okay. And you're using Faro now, it looks like, as your development environment?
Exactly, that's a Faro image. Latest Faro beta.
How do you find that?
Compared to
standard Squeak. Is it better, same, indifferent?
Yeah, well, I particularly like the thousands of fixes that they integrated, and that makes it really, really better, noticeably better. And
it has the Mac OS X look and feel now as well.
Yeah, I'm not using it though because I feel it's a bit too slow. I'm quite happy with the colored browsers because then I immediately know which browser does what. But that's a thing of preference, I guess.
Okay. So I guess it looks like we'll find out what the status of Seaside 2.9 is during the presentation then.
Exactly, and we'll do some good announcements there too, so there is something that people can really appreciate and wait for.
Ooh, a surprise.
Right. Surprise, surprise, yeah.
So that means we have to get this out this weekend so that people will be excited.
Well, it'll come out later today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sounds good. Lucas, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Can we interrupt you guys for a second?
Yes, absolutely.
Who are you and what are you doing? Is the first question.
I'm Philippe and I'm sitting here.
So. And Fitzell sitting here too. Yeah, we're tackling some last minute Seaside refactoring.
Is this 2.9?
This is 2.9 stuff.
What are you guys refactoring?
We're trying to get rid of some HTML specific methods on session.
Is this in response to the curl emails?
Yes, it's in response to the curl emails.
So on the Seaside mailing list, there was a guy saying, I really want to use curl, not HTML.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
And part of 2.9 was really trying to get the layering separate so that you could make those kinds of decisions and we weren't forcing certain choices on you. And,
whether it's curl or anything else.
Exactly, curl or anything else. And there's obviously a couple of places where we still have some of them together.
I have on good authority that you're actually meant to be working on a tutorial right now.
Some might think that. I couldn't possibly comment.
No comment.
We'll find out later this week whether you worked on it or not.
That's right, exactly. No, I think late at night is the time for working on tutorials.
Philippe, anything you want to add?
No, I don't know.
We'll find out during the tutorial.
Okay, all right. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Alrighty.
So I guess the next stop here looks like it's Dale from Gemstone. You look like you have a Squeak image sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
So what are you working on?
Meticello and Glamour.
Okay, so probably most people listening to the podcast are only vaguely familiar with what Meticello is. Most people know what Monticello is. Why don't you tell us what Meticello is?
Meticello is the package management system for Monticello.
Okay, and so explain to me what. Okay, so let's drill one level down in the verbiage then. What Monticello actually is a version control system for Squeak, and Michael has ported some of that to VisualWorks and Object Studio. So what does Monticello give you that Monticello doesn't?
Well, Monticello, you are manipulating packages of source code, but what about collections of packages? What about dependencies amongst different packages?
So this gives us the prereqs?
So you can specify. Basically, there's a project in Monticello is a list of packages or project refs.
Okay.
Packages are Monticello packages or Monticello packages.
How does that compare to like RPM and Deb?
It's probably in that same universe.
Is there any reason why
for Smalltalk?
But why wouldn't we use RPM or Deb for that particular job?
We're not cloud-based.
But hang on, we are when you're talking about Monticello.
But the images aren't file-based, so you know you're not doing external operations, you're doing internal operations. Right?
Okay.
And the bottom line is one of the things with Monticello, kind of the evolution was I don't want to have to write a set of tools to manage meta information. I didn't want to have to write a repository format or a file format that represents that. So Monticello is actually the meta information is described in code. So you have a class called the Monticello project or Monticello project for your project. So you name it,
Web velocity?
Web velocity, right? Web velocity project, right?
Okay.
Then a total project. And then you just basically put all the packages in there to manage it, put it in.
Then where do I put that?
And that's in a class. That's a class.
Yeah, but where do I put that?
That would store that in a Monticello package.
So
what you have is the metadata for a project is in a Monticello package.
Right.
You can load the metadata into any image at any time, and it doesn't affect. It loads metadata, not real data. So, and then you can execute the class to load the actual data.
So it's basically a loader that allows you to bring
that's
stuff
basically
in.
What DBM
is it appropriate to have a Monticello file reference another Monticello file?
Yes, and that's the when I said earlier that you had packages, right? Those are the Monticello packages, and then you had project refs. So you would have then a reference to another Monticello project, which would be in another package. And the way this works is, for example, like for Glass, what we do is you've got a package that for Peer, a Monticello package for Peer. So you basically have a Glass repository set up with the minimum loaded, like on the browser and Monticello. And then you would load the Peer Monticello project. And then from there, you can say load a particular version of that project.
Okay.
And Peer depends on Magritte, Seaside, Scriptaculous, and other pieces of Glass and the Glass infrastructure, and that stuff is all loaded and loaded automatically for that particular version. You load a different versions of all the packages.
Okay,
so it's kind of a distributed, so this is getting into it's a distributed package management system for Monticello, and Monticello is a distributed source code.
Okay, so how does that compare? We talked to Colin a while ago, Colin Putney, about Monticello 2. So how does this relate, if it does at all, how does it relate to Monticello 2?
Monticello would be Monticello for Monticello 2.
Okay.
Would be another, because the Monticello 2 is a source code distribution mechanism.
Right.
And management system, and again, it doesn't manage configurations, it doesn't manage lists of projects.
I was under the impression that Monticello 2 did.
Yes.
Well, of course, it doesn't do anything right now. But.
Well, no. I was under the same impression, and then I spent a couple of days up in Vancouver talking over what Monticello 2 was doing with Colin and, and Julian, and got to the point where we said, for doing configuration management, you probably need a separate system to do that. So I think what it does is it manages sets of limited sets, all right, but it's monolithic, all right, in its management. So you can have packages that are made up, or they're not packages, I think they're slices that can be made up of other slices, all right, but what you end up with is much like a Monticello package with required projects where you have this monolithic kind of thing that's all together. And if you want to be able to load different pieces or manage the pieces separately, that's not managed by Monticello computers. So that's what Monticello would come into play. Basically, relate two different projects from two different places.
Let's do two different schools of thought. Like, if you're playing in SVN world, then you're in the monolithic model. And if you come from the MV world, then you're more of the pre-ops model, which is sort of like Debian, etc. Yep.
So that's Monticello is just trying to play in the Monticello universe, and that's kind of the way the system works. It's just that there's no way of encoding these configurations, all right?
Okay.
And a big distinction is this is a deployment and communication kind of scheme. Okay. For development, you have different kinds of needs for doing development.
Right.
Monticello is aimed at specific versions. A specific version has a specific list of packages associated with it, or in specific versions of the packages that it requires. All right? That's the terminology that requires something, and those things get loaded first.
Okay.
But and then there's like I said, it's all class based, and so it uses Monticello as the file format. So we have repositories everywhere.
Is there a web page people can go to?
There is a not yet. There's a blog in Gemstone Soup. There's a blog post on Monticello. In fact, here I'm talking to folks about what Monticello needs to basically be a broader than just.
So I guess in the future, if people pay attention to what's on the Gemstone Soup blog, if there's a website eventually, it'll be announced there.
Okay. Because right now it's kind of piggybacked on the Monticello project, but it may get to the point where it becomes separate.
Okay.
But,
all right. Thanks, Dale. So, let you introduce yourself for the podcast.
Hi, I'm Tudor Jirba.
Yes.
And I'm here right now working on Glamour.
So, why don't you tell us what Glamour is?
Glamour is a framework for expressing browsers. So, we want to script browsers. So, suppose if you know OmniBrowser?
Yes.
Yep.
That's a framework. And with which you can define browsers.
Okay.
But Glamour, it's also a framework. It's an engine for defining browsers, but we are scripting interface. So instead of writing your own classes, meta describing the domain first, and meta describing the browser, and then running that part, putting linking them together. Instead of that, you just have a prototyping environment in which you just script your browser. So basically, and you can, so basically doing what Montreal does for visualization.
Okay. Okay, so why would I do this? Why would I do that for a browser instead of, say, just using whatever browser comes with the Smalltalk system I'm using?
So this is not for a code browser. It's for a data model.
Oh, all right.
A data model.
So more like instances browser.
Right. And your class is, whenever you have a Smalltalk browser, a code browser, is also dealing with objects there.
So it's not like
it's a special kind of browser.
A constrained super inspector.
No. You can see it as you want, but it's not. It's a browser. You have your data model, and then you want to present it in different ways. You want to interact with it in different ways, and then you want to navigate from one place to another.
Uh-huh.
So if you made a file browser for example?
Yeah, for example, in a file browser?
Yeah, sure.
Take a look.
For those people listening?
This will look really cool on your podcast.
Yep. For those of you with the special audio version, you can see nothing now.
Yeah, special video version.
Doesn't exist.
Very
so, if you take a look for a file finder, this is something that will look exactly like Apple.
Can we see it running, or have we ambushed you at the wrong time for that?
Absolutely not. just hit up a list of classes, or a list of files and folders. Here I select the folder, get a list of things, like that. It's going to be too large. So,
does it keep expanding with more?
Yeah, so that's from here.
Pay no attention to the exception.
No exceptions. So here I selected the folder, it has another folder in there.
Right.
That reminds me of Trailblazer in Visual H.
But this is the same, so this is a file explorer now. This is very similar to something like you get in Windows. So you get those things.
Right.
Yes, see.
So it'll show you a preview of it, yeah.
Or then you can have more complicated things, like this is an object inspector. This is the code.
Right.
So here I have an object inspector, and then I can just select something, just move on. So, or I can evaluate, so I can just go on. This is a collection of things, we don't want element.
Right.
Inspect things, I can move on.
So this will be a whole new breed of tools for Squid.
Actually, it works also in Visual Web, so there's a independent model.
Okay.
It's not like platform specific. We have a render there for Widgetry.
Okay.
The reason why it's Widgetry and not the other ones is that we just didn't have enough knowledge to script wrapper. And there's also a renderer for CSite. So you get exactly the same browsers that you get here. You get them in. You can just run them and then get them in CSite.
Certainly CSite will work in either VisualWorks or Squeak, Faro, any of these, pretty much any of the small talks.
Yeah. So for example, this is a class browser. And so I selected here a category, and I selected a class, and then here I have the complexity of these classes.
Right.
So the class comment and so on.
Okay.
And this is the size of the screen. This class.
Right.
It's pretty impressive. It's very small.
Yeah.
Very
short. You'll soon have the opportunity to vote for it.
No, but okay. You're going to vote for Web Velocity, I think.
So I'm seeing campaigning going on here now.
Well,
and you know, donations are always welcome.
Absolutely. Okay, we can strike a deal afterwards.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I guess we're sitting here at a table labeled Moose. Who am I talking to?
Okay, my name is Simon Denier. I'm a post-archaeological linguist.
My career, I'm kind of one of the main developers behind the Moose, and actually porting Moose on the Faro platform.
Okay. And so what is Moose?
Moose is an environment for reverse engineering any kind of code. So it's mostly small talk code, but also we are doing by some importer for Java code or C code, and we can develop our importer for our code.
Okay. And as you said, the environment itself is pretty visual, so probably a screencast or a video would be a better thing. But it can show you visualizations of what your code actually looks like if you wanted to get a better idea for it.
The basic thing is Moose. You have a browser. It's a browser for code.
Yes.
And the browser allows you to inspect the entity in your model. So if I take a small talk model, for example, it has packages, the classes, the methods, and with the browser you can go through it, see the relationship between the entity, the location. You can also see the metrics. You can compute metrics, all metrics for a project.
Okay.
See that. And the browser is just like something to start with. After that, generally you want to launch a deeper analysis. So it can be visualization tool, but I see also some tools to compute cycles or to see the history of a project.
But do you have the all important 3D city view of your code?
Not in Faro Moose right now, because it requires a 3D engine.
Right.
So it's part more on the VisualWorks engine. Sort of.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So Moose runs at least in Squeak, obviously Faro, since I'm looking at Faro sitting there, and VisualWorks. Does it run in anything else?
No.
Okay.
Wow, that's quite a few already. Though.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be complete here. Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thank you. In this next segment, I have Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. You're testing out part of your system when you run across something strange in an unrelated area. Perhaps it didn't work the way you expected, or perhaps it raised an exception you didn't expect. Most people have a tendency to ignore the problem. You may think that it was just a fluke. You may feel that you're too busy doing your own work to worry about this problem. Perhaps you think you'll look into it later and then forget about it. You may think that nobody else has reported this before, so it can't be something serious. In my experience, very few of the problems that occur in the field actually get reported back to the developers. It's amazing how many problems people just live with and not complain. If you do come across a problem, you have to fight the urge to bury your head in the sand and ignore the problem. Either look into it right away or report it in your bug tracking system with as much information as you can provide about how to reproduce it. If you just bury your head in the sand, problems that should have been found in the lab may find their way into the field and cause much more trouble. This has been the Simbron Design Minute. Simbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.simbron.com or email info@simbron.com.
We're sitting here with Monty Williams of Gemstone. He's here at ESUG. What have you been working on since you've been here?
Oh, well, what have I been working on since I've got here? I'm actually trying to import Seaside into Maglev, which, you know, Maglev is a Ruby implementation built on top of Gemstone S, and so it has the entire Gemstone S Smalltalk infrastructure. It's built on 3.0, which is a generation beyond 2.x of Gemstone, so it's fully native code, just-in-time compiled, etc. And so most of the year we've been working on getting the Ruby part working correctly, but of course it's still Gemstone, so it still runs the standard Gemstone stuff, including Seaside, but since it's the next generation, it's not completely there yet. So I can actually, using Dale's Metacello packaging stuff, which solves the problem of having to go tear my hair out and figure which, you know, 47 different packages I have to load.
And if I were rude, I'd say it looks like you've already done something.
Yeah, I've definitely, yeah, you can see, this is to stop, you know. That's
I can see that because I've been saying that.
Would that mean that you would be able to use Seaside from the Ruby front end?
Yeah, yes, you would be able to use Seaside from the Ruby front end. I would actually just recommend that they use Seaside. But
is the Seaside from Ruby?
No, I mean, it's still a little bit of an open question how much you can mix and match. I mean, I can call Smalltalk from Ruby, and I can call Ruby from Smalltalk, but we're not there yet. I mean, we still have, you know, we've still got to get it running, you know, Ruby completely, which it hasn't done yet. We're maybe three-quarters the way there.
To some extent, if you get them in looking at Ruby and Gemstone, you can then say there's this really cool thing over here that maybe you haven't seen yet.
That's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, there really is. And, you know, we're finding that people who, you know, we go to Ruby groups and we talk about it, and Rubyists, unlike, let's say, Java people, Rubyists have some appreciation for Smalltalk because they realize that it's in their lineage somewhere. So, yeah, I would say Ruby people are fairly receptive to it. We'll see how receptive they really are when we can get it in their hands and see.
So I guess if you're working on Gemstone 3.0, you're probably doing 4 of Seaside 2.9, right?
Yes. Well, actually, with Metacello, I actually loaded Seaside 2.8. I can load Seaside 2.9, and like I say, it just solves the problem. If I could just load them, you know, I can load them separately.
It's like so you're getting project promotion.
Yeah, I know. It's really great. So, I mean, I'm a big Seaside fan. I mean, you guys are doing Seaside. We're doing Seaside. I think it's great. It's much simpler. It's hard to understand how people would do a really large project in Ruby compared to a large project that you could do in Smalltalk. It's, you know, it just seems a lot looser. I think I could get into a lot more trouble. But it's also a good language.
Since you're working on Maglev, why don't you tell us what kind of state Maglev is in?
Oh, okay, sure. Well, we started Maglev slightly over a year ago. Actually, I guess we started it from scratch on Valentine's Day of 2008. And the first 100 days, we just, we got it to where we could demo something. At that point, actually in October after that, we started running Ruby specs. When Ruby specs are a measure of how much Ruby you run, there's probably about somewhere in the neighborhood of 24,000 core and language Ruby specs. And we could not run at the time we were at RailsConf 2008, we couldn't run the Ruby, the MSpec framework, which is what's used to run Ruby spec, so we didn't know how much we ran. We ran, Webrick, which is a little web server. We ran a few things, and we thought, wow, this is really cool. We must be doing pretty good. Well, once in October, when we started running Ruby specs, we found out we only ran 3,000 out of 24,000 Ruby specs. So it turns out that you don't need a whole lot of Ruby in order to run Webrick. Well, after since then, we've made a lot of progress on Ruby specs. We now run just slightly over 18,000, about 18,500 Ruby specs out of 24,000. Some of those we may never run because there are features that are deprecated in 1.9 that we aren't going to include. So we're well on our way. And we took 3 months off after RailsConf this year to do a couple of things. We had been using a parser that was built on MRI, Mott's Ruby Interpreter. We didn't have our own parser. So Alan bit the bullet and took a parser that was written in Ruby and made it work on top of Maglev. So we now have a native parser that doesn't require MRI. And the other thing that we did is we went through a couple of iterations of persistence API. So how you would make Ruby code and Ruby objects persistent in the same way that Gemstone S makes Smalltalk code and Smalltalk object persistent. So during that 3 months, we hardly made any progress on specs because we were rewiring stuff under the covers. And so for about a month now, we've been back on specs, and we passed about 2,000 more specs than we did a month ago. And we actually just last Friday pushed out to alpha customers the first release with a little sample persistence application.
Does things like JRuby pass all of the specs?
No, it turns out that even MRI doesn't pass all of the specs. The specs constantly evolve. And you realize there is no spec for Ruby other than it should run the way that MRI runs. I mean, there's no language spec. They're trying to work on a formal language spec, but there isn't. And so people contribute to Ruby specs as an open source project as they find...
But it has no actual bearing on
reality. But no, we've all agreed. So between the JRuby guys, the Rubinius guys, and even Mott's, we all kind of agreed that we're progressing towards where if you run sufficient Ruby specs, you can say that you're Ruby and not some other...
How many do you have to be able to run?
Nobody's ever come up with that conclusively, but MRI is supposed to run all of them. I think it runs 99.9% JRuby.
It's like R, I don't understand it, but I know what I like.
Yeah, so we don't run enough yet, but there are Ruby implementations for Mac. There's Iron Ruby from Microsoft. There's Mac Ruby from Apple. There are others, that are nascent Ruby implementations that aren't there yet. But definitely of the ones that are production ready, it's MRI and JRuby are the two that where you'd be safe to use in production. Maglev, it'll probably be next year before Gemstone 3.0, which is the relation of Gemstone to Maglev is similar to the JRuby to the Java VM. So that we have, Gemstone provides this underlying technology that it's built on, and then Maglev is an open source project built on top of that. And that's all the Ruby code that runs on top of the VM makes it work. So there's, equivalent to the kernel classes in Smalltalk, we've got, a ton of structure that goes on top of the VM.
Say a few words about Gemstone 3.0 there. What's the big change in 3.0 from 2.0?
I think it's maybe 30% faster. I think James can probably tell you more about 3.0. From my perspective, the difference is that it has bytecodes that enable you to run Ruby in addition to the bytecodes that enable you to run Smalltalk. Because Ruby's different enough, zero based, set of one based. I mean, there's enough differences that you don't want to be running pure Smalltalk and then making the adjustments to run Ruby. So yeah, so we have, I don't know. I used to know how many new bytecodes we'd created, but it's not, it's not like hundreds, but it's, you know, I mean, I guess there could be 100 or more. I don't know how many new bytecodes. Yeah, we have specific Ruby bytecodes, and Ruby's a lot more complex a language than Smalltalk. Yeah, I mean, you got Smalltalk, you got, what, two operators and five reserve words? I mean, Ruby's got so many, I can't even count how many operators Ruby has. I have to have a book to look them up. And so, yeah, so from my perspective, it's that it's got those bytecodes. But
a lot of difference to
yes. Yeah, it does. It does have a lot.
If you're silly enough to actually make your own pauses and pause next to Ruby, then you have to face all the big
Yeah, that's true. So, but the interesting thing about the, so the, one of the different, if you look at primitives in MRI, has a lot of stuff that you fall back to in C. We have two levels because we can fall back to Smalltalk, so we have a lot of, you know, we get a kind of a leg up on getting stuff running by being able to take advantage of existing Smalltalk classes. So there's a bit of a mapping, but not 100% mapping between the two. Yeah, so ask James about 3.0. I'm sure he's been doing, probably working on the QA for it. He'd tell you a lot more about what's different from a Gemstone S perspective.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Monty.
Hey, glad to talk.
Up next is Randall Schwartz with a quick look around the Squeak world with Squeak News.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. Chris Muller announced release 42 of Magma to the Squeak Dev mailing list. Magma is a multi-user object database for Squeak and Faro images and provides transparent access to a large-scale shared persistent object model. Magma release 42 brings unprecedented scale and availability of persistent domain models to Squeak users. In particular, a single logical repository can now be served from multiple servers simultaneously, each hosting their own physical copy, which are kept constantly up to date automatically. There's lots more information, introductory material, and documentation at the Magma homepage. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
All right, so we're back on here. Who am I talking to?
Subiano Katsuita.
Okay, and what are you working on here at Camp Smalltalk?
With Adyel Pascal, it's an open source repository called DA Smalltalk.
Oh, I've seen this. Is this the Seaside project?
Yes.
Okay. So for those of you who are watching on the non-existent video,
yeah.
So this is a Seaside-based open repository for VA.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it pulled from Envy?
It's on top of Envy. So.
Okay, so you've got a Seaside application that is looking at an Envy repository underneath and then presenting a Seaside view of that.
Well, and it looks just like the configuration that runs.
Oh.
Does it provide exports in that format when you?
Yes. It's upload and download.
Upload too. Oh, cool. So this is the first Seaside I've seen running from VA.
I guess so.
Are you actually running? Oh, so you're running on VA. You're not running on something else and then talking to VA. You're actually running Seaside on VA. Okay. And is this then Seaside 2.8 or Seaside 2.9? Okay. So I guess since you're one of the first. Actually, I think you're the first people we've talked to who are building an actual application in 2.9 instead of developing 2.9. From a developer's perspective, what do you think of 2.9 then?
Well, I don't know 2.8.
Okay.
It seems okay. Well, actually, what about Seaside in VA? How does it work? You know, is it got any kind of rough edges?
Yeah, there are some rough edges, so continuations are not working yet.
Are they going to be? Because Seaside 2.9 doesn't actually need continuations.
No. So when we use jQuery all over the place, so we do not actually need
them. Right, yeah. The more JavaScript you use like that, the less you need them. Yeah.
So that is, well, it's sort of inconvenient because some things you can do very easily with configurations and for the rest you do not really care.
Mm-hmm.
There are also at the service portal level, there are some issues to you.
Okay.
Not too bad.
Okay. So, what? How complete do you think this? How is this an open thing that people are actually using now?
Yeah. It's because
of
the public one. There's a whole. Let's have a look at the statistics.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Visually, we're seeing some actual graphs here of what's in the repository, just for the audio.
Okay. That looks really nice.
Yeah, I was surprised by this jump at the end. People start to download stuff.
Well, you know, this is really the only way I've seen people share stuff with Visual Age.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a goodies page on the Instantiation's website. I don't know if it's still there, but that hasn't been updated for a long time.
It's still there, but the plan is to either put everything what is on there on the distribution CD or on past goodies.
Okay. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
So this is very cool for Google indexing and everything, but you can also from your from your image to import from the website as well.
Oh, neat.
That is not C-site, that is not
right.
Sitting next to C-site.
And can you publish from your image? That's very useful.
Okay.
Ask if you are sure about the open sourcing your stuff. Okay, fill in some metadata space, and then later use to populate papers like this one. So this metadata now is used to present the project from Google and generate links to your blog.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, that's very cool stuff.
I wish this had existed when I was doing VA.
You can come back if you want.
All right. Oh, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks.
So we're sitting here with Neil Ross and Torsten Seitz, and you guys are working on...
I've been working on S-Unit 3.2, which is going to be at the conference. We're doing some porting of that. Torsten has also been giving me some feedback on tweaks to the graphic tools, so on as to they are what's missing. Torsten.
Photo management tool, which I'm trying to
Okay. And with SUnit 3.2, so what's the big going on with SUnit? What's changing from older SUnit to this?
Very little, because there's a great emphasis on backward compatibility and cross-dialect compatibility. The main thing is the test resource will become a less irritating class. You could very easily click on...
The audience has just gone wild in the background.
You could click on your 15,000 test to run while you went to have a cup of coffee or go to your meeting or maybe go home and come in next day and you saw, I'm terribly sorry, but one or maybe two of your 15,000 tests required a test resource, but I seem to have a little difficulty setting up, so I did nothing. And that was kind of irritating. So a number of improvements, of which I think that would be the one that
you... You know, if test resource works that way, you should have renamed it test manager.
Yeah.
That would have been a far more appropriate name. I mean, I know manager is normally not the name for a class, but it would be oddly appropriate for reasons.
Very appropriate. Yeah. I do nothing yet.
That
and a number of very, very minor cleanups, and also at this conference, I'm gathering ideas. I've had useful information from Mark and others to say where SUnit should go.
Uh-huh.
Nice, safe, cross-dialect base around which many other interesting things, including things like Travis and Bonnie and others.
Okay. And so what's been going on with the refactoring work?
We've moved a number of things into 7.7. A number of other things are going to be in the custom refactoring browser for 7.7. So you'll see better when you add parameter refactorings. You'll at least be able to give them the same names as where you like in the method instead of just adding them at the end. When you remove a parameter from your method, you will suddenly discover that your originally sensibly named method has now lost its parameter. It's now called all and no longer. And others, which you then have to try and find and change every day. You can also do dynamic renamings if you have, unfortunately, nevertheless, got yourself in a situation where you can't statically refactor and there's something that's dynamic refactoring stuff contributed. Just load it, it works, it plays with 7.7. And you will also be able to have, still in the customer factory project, bells and whistles for using a rewrite to things that make it easier for people to install it.
And what was it Dave Buck told me once when I was trying to do a screencast on the rewrite end tool? His suggestion to me was just keep adding apostrophes until it works.
Yeah. Well, the great thing with the rewrite tool, in order to use it, it's exactly like XP. Take the rewrite tool and paste not some fancy meta expression, the actual code.
So you didn't mean like Windows XP where it would suddenly crash.
Extreme programming.
Okay.
Paste, match, verify that the code on one method you intend to match matches when you paste it into the rewrite tool. That is your first test. You then add one apostrophe. Don't keep adding apostrophes. And then press the button. Does it match? If it matches, that was a safe step. If it doesn't match, there is something you did not understand. And your apostrophe is not the right apostrophe, or maybe it's not in the right place, and you need to move it. Get it to match. Then add a second apostrophe, or maybe an at symbol, or maybe a dot. Press the button again. Does it match? Like XP, if you just do it step by step and match every time, when you go wrong, you'll know. Whereas if you try to write the expression, and you're not a very skilled individual, you will write the expression and get completely lost.
James is waving his hand. I think after that explanation, I have to ask the questions of, when did you come to Earth, and where did you hide the bodies? Yes, the rewrite tool is not user-friendly, but it's pretty damn powerful, so possibly that's a good thing.
It is. Being able to use it when you want it, you really want it. Sometimes regex is better, sometimes just hacking around is better.
Right,
sometimes
actually,
it is nice to know that you can make
things. I agree that the two tools don't overlap that much.
No.
The kinds of transformations I do with the regex tool versus the rewrite tool are very different.
Yeah, so it's great because they're nicely complementary. Sometimes you really want to understand source code. Sometimes that's the last thing you want to understand. You want to say, find this thing, and I don't care if it is or is not in the comment, if it is or is not the first keyword of several. You know, don't make me ask a question. I just want to change this misspelled thing. I want install with one L to have install with two L's because I no longer care that it's more than eight characters or something.
Crazy things like, well, I know that this developer made a whole bunch of methods that include strings that happen to include source code in them, and I really wish that source code were the methods. So I'm going to use regex to actually extract the code out of the string and make it the method.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that with rewrite tool.
Yeah, right. The rewrite tool understands too much for some things. Regex is right. Other times, you desperately do need that parse of the source code, otherwise you can't spread it.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds good.
Yep.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Torsten.
So James and I have walked away from the noise.
And we just talked to 5, 6, 7, 10, I don't know, a large number of groups and projects going on at Camp Smalltalk. And contrary to our earlier expectations for the first two or three tables we talked to, not everyone is working on their tutorial or project.
No, not everybody was willing to talk, but a lot of people were. We got called back to a couple of people, so that was good. I think you could definitely say the Smalltalk community is quite alive and very well across Smalltalks. It's not all a squeak thing at all. And some of the most interesting stuff was happening in VSE, VisualWorks, Gemstone, and Squeak. So
and we even saw one VA project in there.
And the VA project was interesting. What was missing was Dolphin.
Yeah.
The only mention of Dolphin I got was from Neil with the Seaside work he was doing. One of the Dolphin people is porting the new Seaside to Dolphin.
Right.
S-Unit. S-Unit's very much like that. It's always been across all the small talks.
Yeah. So we had a good time. We walked around to a lot of people, got some good conversation. I'll be editing this together. Should be out. Actually, when you're listening to this, this whole conversation won't matter. But yes, it'll be out before the Innovation Awards. So you should watch what you should do. Well, if you're here, you should attend the Innovation Awards.
You should listen to this if you're here.
Yeah.
You should just listen to this.
Right.
Because there's some spoilers in this.
Yes.
Maybe we should put a warning up front. There are some spoilers for upcoming content for this conference.
Right. But if you're not here, what you should do is you should pay attention to the video feed coming off of the CINCOM Smalltalk site, because when the Innovation Awards come up on Monday, like we did last year, we'll be walking around with a video camera and getting some bits. Yeah. We'll be getting...
I'm actually presenting at the Innovation
Awards. So we'll be getting bits from everybody involved in the Innovation Awards.
Now, how does the Innovation Awards work? Everyone just sort of stands around and...
Everybody gets a little table with a little placard saying what their project is and who they are, and people come around who are supposed to vote on... Everybody who's attending gets to vote as to what they think the best project is, and people just walk around and say, who are you and what the heck are you doing?
Yeah, which is what we just did.
Basically what we just did, only then they vote.
Yeah, so I'm not sure which projects we just talked to a whole bunch of people. I'm not sure which of those projects are part of the Innovation Awards. Obviously there was Metocello
is, and some of the others are, but you know, we'll find out when I do the video for those, and in the meantime, that's pretty much a wrap for today.
Yep, well, I guess we'll do our evening. We probably won't do an evening thing this time.
No, this is long enough that we won't do an evening thing.
This is the evening thing right here. This is the wrap-up.
This is the wrap-up. This is this week's podcast, episode 151, live from ESUG 2009, with James Robertson and Michael Lucas-Smith.
Au revoir.
Bonjour. If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the Industry Misinterpretation of the podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@cincom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.